Hello and welcome to The Bottom Line, a podcast that links lessons learned from sports, business, and life. I am your host, Ben Rogers, the founder of TBL Coaching, LLC, which is a professional accountability and coaching service that encourages discipline and preparation among leaders. The bottom line is the belief that practice is more important than the game, and by implementing disciplined habits, more time is created to be present with and positively impact others. Guests on the podcast include coaches, athletes, educators, and other leaders. And today I'm honored to be joined by Kevin Eastman, a former college and professional basketball player and coach. Coach Eastman is in the University of Richmond Basketball Hall of Fame and won an NBA title with the Boston Celtics in 2008 as an assistant coach to Doc Rivers. Today, Coach Eastman is known as a thought leader in the sports world. And in 2018, he published the book, Why the Best Are the Best. 25 powerful words that impact, inspire, and define champions, where he pulls lessons learned from interactions with well-known coaches and players over his impressive tenure as a basketball player, coach, and executive in the NCAA and the NBA. With all that said, Coach, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate you having me on, and love what you're doing with this and sharing ideas from different people who have maybe been a little bit successful in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, once again, I appreciate your time. I know you get a lot of requests like this, so I'll make sure we get you in and out so that way also people have time to listen to it on their way to and from work. But let's start with this. Let's just start with a quick bio on you, but from yourself.
Well, you know, for me, it was it's been a pretty basic, I think, an American life. Grew up in New Jersey, South Jersey, just outside of Philadelphia. When I was young, I fell in love with the sport of basketball. And little did I know at the time that basketball would take me all around the world, give me the opportunity to meet so many people I knew when I was a kid I would never meet. So, I played in, they called it middle school back then. I played in middle school and probably wasn't very good, but just kept working and practicing and playing and going out in the backyard basket and court, and had a really good high school career, which gave me the opportunity to get a scholarship to play at the University of Richmond. And then had a good collegiate career, and that allowed me to play in a professional league that took the place of what used to be called the old ABA. Played in that for a little under a year because the league folded. And then I was left to figure out, what do I want to do? So the love of basketball never left. So the next logical step would be, why don't I coach? Because I enjoyed working with people. I enjoyed the summer camps that I worked at during my college career where I taught the game. I enjoyed seeing players start on a Monday and not very good at a particular skill. And then maybe by Friday, after we spend time with them and extra time with them, all of a sudden they start to get it. So that was kind of a motivating force for me that I could maybe help some people actually do what they love and sure. Do what they hope they could do. So the coaching career went very well and was a college coach for 22 years. And then when I left college, I decided to run my own camp business and did that here in Richmond. Was going great. Was going to do that for maybe forever. And then I got a call from Doc Rivers, who ended up becoming the coach of the Boston Celtics. And to make a really long story extremely short, he ended up hiring me to be one of his assistant coaches with the Celtics. And that led to winning an NBA championship in 2008, coaching in a couple of all-star games. So being around the best of the best, sure, in my sport. And then I went with Doc to Los Angeles to coach Los Angeles Clippers. And then from there, I decided that, there was more that I wanted to do. So I got into the speaking but up until when the virus broke, I was doing about, 60 to 65 talks a year. So it kept me busy, kept me moving, kept me sprinting at times. But it gave me the opportunity to share all of the experiences and lessons that I was so fortunate to be involved in or learn along my journey. And then most importantly of all, I guess my bio is really all about being a husband and a father. So Wendy and I live here in Richmond, Virginia, and our son Jake is actually a scout for the Boston Celtics. So
all right.
I have no idea why he got into that crazy level of sport, but he loves it. So, and I can ask him one time a year, because you can only ask your child one time a year, do you still like it? Because right. if I ask Jake twice in a year, he'll say, you just asked me that 4 months ago.
That's right.
So I'm waiting for my chance this year to say, hey, you still liking it? But he loves it. So more power to him.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations on such an amazing career. And I think it's awesome that you're going and giving back now to so many others. You said you do about 60 to 65 talks a year. You were, and I'm sure you'll get back to that once more things open back up. Who are you usually speaking to? What types of groups of people?
Well, there's two tracks. Sports teams, mainly because my speaking is for the most part fee-based, so that probably puts you into the category of college teams and professional teams. So, college teams from the best in the country, say at Kansas, to maybe a team that people don't even think about much, Columbia, right? So it runs the gamut in college. Professional sports, NBA, Major League Baseball, done some things with coaches in the NFL. So that's the sports team side. And then on the corporate side, it's Fortune from 500 to 100 companies, and all across the country and some around the world. And it's leadership teams, C-suite level meetings, conferences, sales teams. So I like it because it's a variety. So it's been fun. I've been doing it for this was my fourth season out, I think. So it's been great.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I'm obviously a big fan that, you know, this podcast is about linking lessons learned from sports, business, and life, because as you know, they all link together. I mean, for gosh sakes, you wrote a whole book about it. So I'm excited to talk about that with you here in a sec. I'm obligated to ask this question with the new documentary that just broke out with The Last Dance about the Bulls when Michael Jordan was there. It was kind of cool because I'm sitting there watching, and obviously Phil Jackson's a big part of that. But I believe that's who you guys defeated in 2008 when he was coaching the Lakers. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
You had mentioned earlier on when you were giving your bio that you were able to meet some people that you never thought you'd meet. I mean, to me, being across the sidelines, or I guess in basketball, right down the row, seeing somebody like Phil Jackson who has won 6, 7, 8 NBA titles, what's that like going into a game against somebody like that?
Well, you know, when you're competing against the other team, you want to be aware of how the coach thinks and his strategy and his substitution patterns. But really, you're not thinking about Phil Jackson. You're thinking about Kobe Bryant.
Right.
So you're thinking about Pau Gasol. You're thinking about Ron Artest or sure. Whatever he was called at the end.
Right.
So all of our preparation was how can we beat their players, but be aware of if we put the Lakers in challenging situations, what would Phil Jackson, what might he do? Because as anyone who's read the Art of War by Sun Tzu, one of the tenets is know thy enemy, right? So, but it really wasn't Phil Jackson based, even though, like, I don't even remember seeing him.
Right.
Even now during the series.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Kobe.
Yeah, I bet you did.
You know, God bless his soul. But, you know, that's what you do when you're playing. You know, when the best are going against the best, you have to beat their team.
That's right. What was the biggest difference in that 2008 championship team that you coached in Boston versus other teams that you coached?
It was a true team. They truly gave up their personal agendas. They were over themselves. And they were into the team. And that's huge at all levels, because everything's relative. The best player on a high school team may, in fact, have the same mindset as the best player on a pro team. And it can go either way. Either they become cocky and real ego-driven, or they give into the team. right? And I wouldn't even say give in, because championship teams don't give in, right? They do for. They do for a teammate, right? So our guys just, you know, we got them at the right time, because Kevin Garnett, who we traded for, Ray Allen, who we traded for, they had already made all the money. They had all the houses. They had all the cars. They had all the vacation homes. But what you find in pro sports is the one thing that you can't buy is the championship ring.
Absolutely.
So we caught them at the right time, and we really – We were big on fit, and a major part of the fit was the character of the person. And we got great fits from all 15 players, and we came together as a team.
Who do you believe was maybe the biggest leader on the team that was a player?
Well, no question, it was Kevin Garnett, and he led by example. Everyone thinks he led by his mouth because they see how energetic and emotional he is. But no, on a daily basis, because the power of leadership in pro sports are the days that no one sees us on TV.
Right.
Because the leadership has many venues in sport. The easiest venue is the court.
Right.
Because if the players don't lead on the court, the coaches can take over.
Sure.
But the venues that are important in sport are, hey, what about when you're on a team bus? What about you're in the hotel? What about you're in the restaurants? There's all venues of leadership. What about in the dorm for college guys, right? What about at the party, right, for high school and college guys? There's leadership that can take place there too. And so Kevin was one. And then I'm going to throw another name out that no one ever talks about, James Posey. In essence, he became the leader of our second unit. And we didn't call them bench players, because bench players never play. They just sit on the bench. That's why they call them bench players. We call them our second unit, because we had two units and they were equally important. So his nickname is Pose. Pose ended up really taking control of that second unit. You could even see him when he knew that it was about time for a starter to come out. Pose was talking to the next guy going in.
Right.
Hey, now be ready. This is what we got to do. Look, we're down six. When we come back out, we have to be either tied or up.
That's right.
We don't want to come back out and we're down 20.
Yeah.
Right? That's not who we are as a second unit.
Well, and that's just, to me, that's the difference between being bought in and locked in. And I actually read about this in Jay Billis's book, Toughness, where he quoted Coach Tom Cream, where he said the ability to go from bought in to locked in is really a sign of toughness for a player. And so you talk about somebody like Pose, whether he's on the second unit, first unit, really doesn't matter. He sounds like he's locked into the team, and that's what being a leader is all about for sure. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Why the Best of the Best. And thank you for writing it. What a great book. I've used it a ton of times, and little blogs that I do, you know, lessons that I preach to other business owners, all those things. And what I wanted to speak to first was probably my favorite quote from that book that you actually pulled from head coach Doc Rivers, when you said, "The average players want to be left alone. The good players want to be coached, but the great players want to be told the truth." Can you speak to that a little bit and maybe give an example or two?
Well, the best example is when we traded for Kevin Garnett. His first meeting with Doc Rivers, asked, but really more demanded. He said, "Doc, you have to tell me the truth. Like, if you want to get the real Kevin Garnett in a Boston Celtic uniform, you have to tell me the truth." You know, Kevin, he said, you know, "You can call me out in front of my teammates. I'm good with that. You can call me out in front of the media if that's what needs to be done. I'm good with that." You know, Kevin, you could call me out at center court of the Boston Garden in front of 22,000 people, but you need to tell me the truth, right? Because truth is the single most important word in all of success. Because how can you get to where you want to go if you don't know the truth about what you're doing well and keep doing that? Absolutely. And then what you're not doing well and improve upon that, change your plan, change the way you think about that. So some people say the truth hurts. Nah, what I learned being around the best, the truth helps. That's now, right. They get embarrassed sometimes by it. Their ears turn red. Maybe they're a little bit mad for a day or two, but they know deep down the truth helps. It doesn't hurt. So the average player is kind of, you know, that's why they call them average.
Right.
Because they just want to be left alone. Like, hey, coach, I got a Kansas basketball jersey, so I now have cred around campus. So I just want to wear the jersey, but just pretend I'm not here, right? I would even say that maybe we should have said average and below average want to be left alone.
One thing that I say a lot to the listeners on the show and to my clients is that average sits on the bench. You talk about the bench players being just that, bench players. If average just wants to be left alone, that's fine. Be left alone on the bench, right?
Yeah, because success is a spectator sport,
right?
It's not a sit back and enjoy. It's not an entertainment sport, right? So, but the good ones, those ones who are, you know, they come to work and they want to put in a good day's work and they want to earn their salary. They want to be coached a little bit. They want to be led some. But when you take that next step to, like, there's two bests, as I say in the book. There's the best, which is hard. That's a daunting task for many of our people. And I don't even suggest that we put the best tag on somebody or make that as a goal for somebody, because it could even stop them, right? And the other best is becoming my best. So there's the best and my best. And all we ever asked our players to do is just become your best. That's why we signed you. That's why we want you on this team. So if you become your best, our team probably is going to become pretty good if we did a good job in the selection process.
That's right. That's awesome. One of my favorite words, because I know you said you have the 25 powerful words, and one of my favorite words is discipline. That's what my whole coaching company is about, and I know that any level of success requires some form of discipline. And what you say in the book, and I'm going to quote you here, you said that you must look at discipline as the tool you need to get through the days when you don't feel like doing the very thing you know has been a key ingredient to your success. Success does not wait for anyone. It requires many, many disciplined decisions, also known as success decisions. Can you speak to that a little bit, please, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, discipline is a separator to me. Doing some work may be the given to be successful, but the discipline is all about the everyday. And I think those who become successful live in the world of every. They don't live in the world of sometime or I'll get to it, because they often never get to it, right?
Right.
So discipline is doing what needs to be done, doing it the right way, and doing it that way all the time. That's an old quote from Bobby Knight, a basketball coach at Indiana many years ago, that many people have forgotten. So, you know, discipline allows you to or helps you get over the hump on the days you don't feel like doing anything.
Right.
And the things you don't feel like doing are usually the things that actually get you to where you want to go.
Those are the good things. That's right.
Yeah. So the discipline, I always see it as the push. The discipline is two hands behind your back. Right. Because Brad Stevens said something that was really good. He's the coach of the Celtics now. And he said, it's not what you want. It's what you do every day that counts.
That's right.
Right? Because a lot of people want stuff.
Absolutely.
They don't do the things that can get them that stuff or that job promotion or that raise or whatever it is they want.
That's
right. So everyone knows kind of what discipline is. But my point here is just make sure that you are displaying and executing discipline each and every day. You know, it's a rainy day here in Richmond. It's going to be storming all day. It's an easy day to just say, I'm going to just kind of hang out today. Well, hang out today is also defined as lost day today. So have the discipline to just do something.
Do something.
You know, do something.
Yeah. It's funny. You bring up the rainy day. Almost every day that it's raining, the first people I text in the morning is my team to remind them that it's a rainy day and it's our opportunity to continue doing what we're supposed to be doing. Because there's a lot of people that are going to give it up. You know, it's kind of cool to look at maybe the challenging situations and use that as your habit cue to say, okay, now I'm going to get back to what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I wanted to talk a little bit about Coach Mike Rhodes, the head coach at VCU. I had a really, really good time talking with him a couple of weeks ago, and I know you guys are pretty tight. He had nothing but great things to say about you. But in one of the words that you mentioned in your book was urgency. And I can't remember if this was the one where Mike Rhodes was quoted, but if it wasn't, it still applies, where Mike Rhodes said, "I want to make sure that every day we give a damn." And then as it relates to urgency, you said, "The best understand that a presence of urgency is how they gain separation from their competition. They take care of the now." What do you have to say about the word urgency, coaches?
Well, remind me to get back to urgency, but one thought please on this rainy day. For all your listeners, just remember just remember how important rain is, right? Because everything outside in your garden and all these trees, they grow because of the rain.
Right.
So when that rain's happening, let's us too grow that day.
I love it.
Rainy day is a great day. So, now, average people call it a rainy day. Maybe we should call it a growth day.
I like it.
Right. Maybe even go out there and stand and take your notes with a piece of plastic over your piece of paper and let the rain hit you and you can grow. All right. So that was a dumb comment. So let's keep moving. So urgency. Here's the biggest thing that I want to say before we lose track of even talking about this. I think we misunderstand this word, and I didn't put this in the book, but everyone thinks urgency is about speed and intensity. No. Urgency is about focus where you are, right? The focus of being there and doing what you're supposed to do at that time. If it's a conversation with someone and they're talking, then my urgency should be all about listening, right? Because great leaders, there's two ways you can listen. You can listen to respond or you can listen to understand. And the best leaders, especially those leading in the crisis and the challenge that we have before us today, are the ones who are listening to understand, right? So because now more than ever, we have to understand what our people are going through because they're not in front of us every day. We can't read body language anymore as a leader right now. We have to read language. Right? How are they saying it? Do they feel that, you know, are they saying in a different tone? Can you sense they're down a little bit? Maybe you can see body language through the internet. But for my urgency is taking care of what needs to be taken care of now and do it to the best of your ability. And urgency also needs, as an ingredient, a little bit of discipline, right? It's a hard part of a game. And you kind of slack off and make, or even if you're up 10, you'd slack off a little bit. That's where you need urgency the most. And urgency is all about right now, where you are. That's how we look at it.
That's right. Of all the players that you coached or coached against, who would you say really defines the word urgency? The one who is always going to be disciplined enough to take care of the now and never put it off.
Probably Kobe. You know, I had a chance to do some things with Kobe with Nike. And obviously we competed against him. So you really learn about that other guy. And we were in the same city there for a while.
Yeah.
With Kobe, the best way, like if Kobe were here on this call today and you asked him, Kobe, why did you become Kobe? He would probably talk about two things. Number one is 4 a.m. He had the urgency each and every day to start his first workout in the off season at 4 or 4:30 a.m. And that became the first of three workouts because he said the reason that was so important was all about the math. The average player in the NBA knows he has to work out. So he probably works out maybe once a day, 4 to 5 days a week in the off season. The pretty good players, they might get a second workout in. Kobe gets three in, right? And he said, just add it up over 17 years, Kev. Just add it up. There's a reason why I'm better than other people. And if people are calling me the best that's playing the game right now, there's a reason why I'm that way.
Yeah.
And the other thing is he would say that he lives in the world of until. He works on things until he masters them. He doesn't work on them until there's 10 repetitions. He doesn't work on them until it's time for dinner. As a college athlete, he's not in the gym until it's time to go to the party. He's in it until he masters it that day.
Right.
So both the actual getting up early and intentionally planning, that's an urgency, right?
Absolutely.
He lives in the now. As soon as he wakes up, he's in the now.
Yep.
And his now is all defined on what can I do to get better?
Yeah.
You know, everyone talks about this like magical thing of the Mamba mentality. And if you had him on this podcast, he would tell you, you know what the Mamba mentality is? I'm going to do everything I can to get a little bit better today.
Right.
That's it. And part of getting better is when I decide I'm going to do a drill, I'm doing a drill.
That's right.
When I decide I'm going to prepare, huh?
Isn't it amazing how simple it really is? Yet for a lot of people, it's so hard to accomplish. Like the idea is, yes, he does more. He wakes up earlier. He does what he says he's going to do. Yet there's so many people who just cannot keep up with that.
Yeah. Well, he will say, no, it's not about doing more. It's about doing what needs to be done to get to where you want to go. Like for him, he's going to make sure that the goals he has for his career and the dreams that he had as a little kid, he's going to make sure his habits match that.
That's right.
If your dreams are here and your habits are here, there's a gap. Right. And that gap is often filled with regret.
Sure.
He wasn't going to regret anything. He was going to live his life fully.
Yeah.
Right? So his habits match his goals.
Yeah, that's awesome. Out of the 25 powerful words that you mentioned in the book, what is your favorite word and why?
Well, they're all favorites to me because I never know when they're going to enter my day. And that's what the words do for me. When I'm in a part of my day and I need one of those, I remember, you know, what it means to me. But I think, you know, I was just on a podcast yesterday and they said, why did you rank them that way? I said, I didn't rank them that way. I just put them in as fit in the book, right? Because there is no ranking except for
sure.
The first word and the last word. Those are the only two words I put intentionally in those places. And the first word is truth.
Yep.
And we already talked about that. It's the single most important word in all success. That's why that's number one. The last word is talent. Because I wanted the readers to understand, if you think talent alone will get you to where you want to go, you're mistaken. Like, just take the NBA. You know, the worst team in the NBA, the 30th best team, also known as the worst team, they have talent. And like, here's what I found out in the NBA. Successful teams that have a shot at a championship, they don't want players with talent. They don't. And I know that will come as a surprise to your listeners, but they don't want players with talent. They want talented players.
Sure.
Talented players. And the difference between talent and talented is the E and the D on the end of talented. And for us, that stood for extra dimension, right? What else do you bring to our team than just your skill? Okay, Ray Allen. Okay, JJ Redick. You shoot really well. That's the skill that's why we brought you onto this team. But what if your shots aren't going in that night? What else can you bring to the team? What can you bring during the week? Like a Kevin Garnett, you know what he brought? An incredible example. It was hard not to practice hard because here's the best player on the team practicing hard. That was an extra dimension he brought. Rajon Rondo with the Boston Celtics, he was a savant in terms of basketball knowledge. He knew every play of every team in the league. He actually knew the plays better than the guys on their team, right? So what he brought is the detail of preparation. That was the extra dimension. The James Posey we talked about, he somehow had this way of bringing guys together. We had a man by the name of Rasheed Wallace. He was great when a teammate got into the doghouse, right? Doc was pissed at him. He would go in the doghouse and help that guy get out.
Sure.
That was an extra dimension he brought. Let alone maybe he was a great three-point shooter as a big man, but he's also a great passer. So he has an extra dimension to his game.
Right.
So those were probably one of my favorite words is intentional, because I didn't think that word would come up. You know, and for the listeners, the way the book came about is I've always wondered what really truly made the best the best. So when I started to go back over all my notes over 35 years, all my discussions with some of the best players in different sports, by the way, best coaches, I've had a lot of friends that are now at the C-suite level, what they do. I started to see when they talked about how they got there or why they think they are who they are right now, there were common words. Well, one word I didn't know would come up. Like I knew preparation would come up. I knew discipline would come up. I knew urgency would come up. I actually knew the truth would come up, but I didn't know intentional would come up. And so my definition of intentional is what you do on purpose to fulfill your purpose. So when you wake up each day and you have a purpose, you're a coach, what are you doing today, especially now in the right. coronavirus, the quarantine, you have some time to get better at your skills as a coach, become a better teacher. Maybe as a leader in the corporate world, maybe you can send your message with better word choices. Right. Maybe when you're sending your message, you can provide hope rather than doom. Tell the truth, but also provide some hope that we are going to get out of this. So intentional to me is a neat word. And it's something that, like, if anyone wants to, like, everyone should know who Oprah Winfrey is, right? Right. Just study her. She built her career on intentionality. Right now, a lot of people have intentions, but that's different than being intentional. Sure. Intentions is it's in my mind and I know I should do it. Intentional, it's front of mind and I right. will do it. Big difference in the two.
Sure. I understand completely. Coach, that's great. I know we're getting close here to 30 minutes, so I'm going to ask you just one final question, then we'll wrap this thing up for you so you can get on with your day. And once again, thanks again for your time. The last question here is this. What are you most proud of? You can maybe give me one personal, one professional, but what are you most proud of?
I guess a couple of things. One is maybe that I was a good example for my son, and maybe it's helped him get into a career that he loves doing, right? That would be number one. And then, you know, you always get asked the tombstone question. So my tombstone is going to be like really big.
Right.
So for me, one of the things for sure is he was always willing to share his experiences and the lessons he learned through his journey. So, yeah. And I'm most proud of that I'm willing to give, I'm willing to share. I'm really, you know, one of my biggest goals is to help people get to where they want to go in life.
Right.
And if I can do that, then there's no doubt I've left a legacy.
Absolutely. Well, and it's funny you mentioned legacy. I actually wrote this down. I just didn't know if I had time to get to it. But since you brought it up, I'm going to read your quote about legacy to the listeners, and then I'll go ahead and wrap it up for you. But you said that if you just want to leave your job after your last day of work, then what you're doing on an everyday basis is probably enough for you to keep your job. But if you want to leave a legacy, then each day of work becomes important. The intent, there's that word, you bring to each day changes. The example you set each day is under greater scrutiny. But most importantly, the lessons you teach those who follow in your footsteps will be rewarded by their success. You leave a legacy by the attitude you bring each day, the example you set, the conversations you have, and the mentoring you do. Your legacy comes from bringing your very best every day and by bringing out everyone else's best as well. That's pretty awesome. I printed out, it's in my office now. So thank you for that, Coach. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that is pretty good. I haven't read that in a while. Who said that?
that was you.
Yeah, I know. Look, here's what I think about legacy. Although I'm not driven by legacy, I'm aware of it. And I like that I'm aware of it because legacy is it's a giving exercise. So to leave a legacy, you have to be a giver. Right? That's really important. So that's number one. And number two, everyone says, well, I can't leave a legacy. I just work in this little company in Richmond, Virginia. So I there's no way I can leave a legacy. Everyone can leave a legacy because a legacy is one person. It's one conversation. It's one connection at a time, right? That can maybe impact or change the trajectory of a career or how someone thinks. And the last thing I'll say about legacy is this. Just do your part in your piece of the world. Just do your part in your piece of the world. Your piece of the world might be 40 people. It could just be your family. It could be a basketball team. It could be a basketball league, like an Adam Silver, the commissioner, or David Stern, right? Who was the past commissioner of the NBA. But just do your part in whatever piece of the world that you have. And then you're going to have a chance to have a legacy.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, this was awesome. That's going to go ahead and wrap it up for episode number 21 of the Bottom Line Podcast. Coach, I can't thank you enough. Do you have any last words for the listeners before we sign this thing off officially?
Yeah, I would say this. Look, there's two types of people in this world. You got to decide which one you want to be. And if you want to be successful, the decision is easy. The execution of it is not easy, because success is not easy, right? There is a price to success. As Kobe said on The Last Dance, there's a price to leadership, right? It's not an easy position. So the two types of people are the following. There are know-it-alls who I don't think ever get to where they want to go in life. They may get a head start on you, but you'll catch them. Don't worry about them. And the other people are the learn-it-alls. And for about the last 35 years, I've been trying to express this to every audience that I speak to. Be a learn-it-all. Develop a curiosity gene, because what you find is one of the traits of all successful people is they're very curious. They want to know a little bit more that might make them a little bit better. That's all, a little more that could make them a little better. And that's how they end up becoming like one of the best. So I would leave people with that.
Well, that's awesome. So to the listeners, make sure we are going to be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all. And please remember to share the Bottom Line Podcast with your average friends you think would find some benefit. I appreciate your support. The mission of TBL Coaching is to build an army of disciplined leaders who are present with and positively impact their relationships and their community. Signing off, he is the coach, the author, and the speaker, Kevin Eastman. I'm your host, Ben Rogers. This is The Bottom Line, and I'll talk to you next time.